Welcome to another episode of the Genetically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Eli Robertson. Today I'll be talking to Barbara Harrison. Barbara, would you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Sure. This is Barbara Harrison. I'm a genetic counselor working at Howard University in Washington, D.C.
To start us off, would you tell us a little bit about why you were drawn to genetic counseling and just about your career journey from where you started to where you have ended up now?
Sure. I'd love to. When I was in high school, I knew that I would be, you know, that I had an interest in being in the health field. I had an interest in biology and science. Kind of knew then that I did not want to be at the bench, but certainly enjoyed the novelty and things always changing in the field of science. And so was certainly drawn to that. And impact, I think I didn't really appreciate at the time, but I do now, is that I have two cousins that have sickle cell disease. And so over my course of growing up, they were, you know, about 5 and 10 years older than me. But as I was growing up, I kind of saw the impact of that on their family, on them, when we would go and visit. And, you know, they might be sick at times or weren't able to kind of hang out with us when we went to visit them. And so I think in the kind of subconsciously, that was beginning to shape where I was going to end up. But in any case, coming out of high school, went to college, biology major, and again, knew I wanted to be in the health field. Didn't really see a path other than medicine, being a physician. So I started on that path, was in the, you know, the pre-med group on campus, those kinds of things. But it didn't take very long for me to see that I wasn't quite engaged in the thought of going to med school and going on that journey like some of my friends were. And so I began to think about different options. And at that point, I figured, well, I'm not quite sure. I was in my junior year, and it's like, I'm not quite sure. Let me just do more school. So I figured I would get my PhD, just being an internal student. And hopefully by the end of that, I would figure it out. So I actually had gone to a genetics department to talk to them about their PhD track and what that might look like. I had developed this interest in genetics in the meantime. And the chair of the department or whoever I was talking to asked me what I would like to do my research on. And I had done some bench work up to that point in undergrad. But when I was talking about this research I would like to do, I reflected back that, you know, maybe I could interact with patients. Maybe I could learn more about kind of what their journey was and things that they were doing and their experiences. And of course, he was looking at me a little sideways at that point. So it was like, well, maybe, have you ever thought about genetic counseling? And he happened to have a genetic counselor who was working with him on a research project. So I went down and talked to her and, you know, the light bulb went off. This is absolutely, you know, what I wanted to do. Now, this was in the early 90s, so it was before the internet. So I started making phone calls and getting packages mailed to me about this field of genetic counseling. But the more that I learned about it, the more excited I got. And this was going into my senior year. It's so funny now, my college roommate sent me a letter that I hand wrote her. It was a 4-page letter. And within this letter, at least 2 pages, I wrote about how excited I was to find this field of genetic counseling. So it was kind of surreal to, she sent it back to me like 20 years later because she found it. It really was a major impact kind of on me at that time. So anyways, when did my research, applied to programs, ended up going to University of Pittsburgh for 2 years to pursue that degree. And then after that, found my way back to the East Coast. I'm from Maryland, a rural part of Maryland, but had kind of hung around D.C. in my college years. And so I was happy to end back up here to pursue my career.
Some people, it's sort of a straight arrow. They know exactly what they want to do and they just go and they get there and it's exactly what they were hoping it would be and it's perfect. And other times people really have to explore and try some things out to figure out what they want to do. You had to do some exploring before you hit on what was really the right fit for you. Now looking back over your training and career, are there any choices that if you went back you would do differently? Or was the path really important in the journey and you wouldn't change it if you had to go back?
So I will say, I don't think I would have changed my journey. I don't think I made any major missteps. I don't feel like I really wasted any time or anything like that. Thankfully, you know, that option of genetic counseling landed just at the right moment, that, you know, that I was able to pursue it and kind of take that path, you know, generally without any hiccups. I will say, before I had learned about genetic counseling, but when I knew that this med school path or even nursing, you know, wasn't going to be quite it, one option I had thought about was a master's in public health. And at the time, I veered away from it because it wasn't quite clear to me what I would do with that afterwards. I think it was just a situation of not knowing all of the various options that are out there just in general in the biomedical space or in the medical space, you know, just in general, even working with patients. You know, it just wasn't a whole lot of information that was out there about what you would do with something like a degree in public health. Yet looking back on it now, and even when I think forward of, you know, what else I would possibly do, I think that would be the option. Not that I'm saying I'm trying to pursue any more school at this point, but, you know, I always said if I did go back, you know, that's probably what I would do. So I think that's something that now I think that options are more available to do a degree in genetic counseling and public health. There are certainly those programs out there that weren't really available, but, you know, might have, if I could talk to my younger self, say, you know, go ahead and forge that path. Go ahead and push that and see if that's something you could do. I think that's something I might have done differently.
This season, a thread that connects all the people that we're talking to is that they're all people that have successful careers in science or medicine, but also value increasing the diverse representation in, equitable access to, and the inclusiveness of different types of people in research and in the clinic and in scientific studies. What do those principles mean to you, and why is it important for us to think about it?
So coming from the African-American community, I certainly identify as that. It has always been very important to me to reach back and bring my community with me. So with that in mind, and the more that I learned about genetics and genetics research and who was really engaged in that research, it just quickly became apparent to me that this was a space that we needed to do more work. And then as things have developed and through the Human Genome Project, and now we're in this era of trying to really realize the benefits of personalized medicine, it's become even more important to engage the community, and again, my focus being the African-American community, in those conversations. Because certainly it's going to be a space where there will be even more health disparities than already exist. So unless we are very intentional about changing that path, you know, we're just continuing to do the things that we've been doing as we've been doing them, and it will only end up being to the detriment of these marginalized communities. So for me, it really has been just something that has always been important to me, something I've always kept in the back of my mind, something that's always motivated me to continue in spaces where maybe there wasn't the representation that would have been nice to see, you know, talking about genetic counseling specifically, but understanding that someone had to be there, someone had to forge that course. And certainly there were people who came before me, and I was the one to, you know, I kind of pick up that torch and continue it on. I think we have made tremendous strides in that. Now, you know, tremendous strides being you start from such a small place and you make tremendous strides, and it's still, you're in a small space, but you're at least occupying a little bit more than what you did before. And so we just need to continue, you know, the work we need to do is far from over.
Part of your work has been as an external advisor on various committees. One example would be the Warren Alpert Foundation Alliance to Increase Diversity in Genetic Counseling. What's your experience been as an external advisor in those kinds of roles? And do you have any advice for people in similar positions so that they can make the most impact?
So it's always an honor to be asked to be on an external advisory board or, you know, any kind of space, you know, similar space. And I think in general, when people are asking me to serve in that capacity, they really do want to hear what you have to say. But it can be very easy to fall back from that position and end up being a sounding board, but never one that then takes that the next step and actually provides advice. And so, you know, often in those spaces, what ends up happening is, you know, whoever's conducting that project or whatever it is simply kind of just reporting to you the things that are happening. And it's very easy to sit there and say, okay, that sounds good. Yeah, that's fine. And maybe, you know, just present maybe a thought or two. But I think what we need to challenge ourselves with is to really go beyond that and really take advantage of being that external voice. Otherwise, it ends up being an echo chamber. And that's what hopefully that project is trying to avoid by engaging these folks coming from the outside. And so to really take that seriously. And it's something I even challenge myself with, because it can vary, you know, you have a lot of things on your plate and, you know, you're like, okay, I gotta get ready for this meeting kind of at the last minute. But, you know, certainly you need to take those roles seriously and commit yourself to take the time to review the, you know, the materials that you're given and to think critically about them and really try to bring in that other perspective, that different perspective. I think also, depending on the committee, the makeup of that committee, sometimes you've been selected because you're still similar to the people who are doing the project. So it was something like Warren Alpert. Maybe, you know, this was a, or is a effort to increase the number of students in genetic counseling programs that come from underrepresented communities. Now, you know, it's a genetic counseling very focused project. I'm a genetic counselor. So in that way, I have some level of, you know, similarity and familiarity with what's going on. But there may be someone else who's on that external advisory committee who maybe isn't from the genetic counseling community, but still has something very valuable to give, again, and being the reason why they're there. I think it's also an opportunity to help to raise those voices, help create space for those voices. So not only bring your own perspective, but really welcoming the perspectives of others at the table who may not feel as empowered, or this may be a very new venture for them, to ensure that their voice gets heard as well.
You co-founded the Genetics Opportunities Learning Development and Empowerment Network. Could you tell us a little bit about what that is and what motivated you to do it?
Absolutely. Love talking about Golden. So, you know, as I alluded to before, being in the genetic counseling space as a Black genetic counselor has been isolating at times. And at best, you know, has been, all right, we need to really advocate to get more people in this space and feeling some empowerment around that. And so over the years, from when I entered into the field in the mid-90s, I have aggregated and have found other Black genetic counselors. And we've continually had conversations around how can we increase the number of Black genetic counselors that are at these meetings. You know, if I'm going to the meeting, how can I get beyond having to only count on one hand and eventually two hands how many other, you know, Black genetic counselors I saw? And so we toyed with many ideas over the years. You know, efforts were always going on of going to historically Black colleges and universities to do talks about genetic counseling, similar to efforts that were going on even in the majority as we just try to increase the awareness of genetic counseling as a field in general, but with our efforts really focusing on those HBCUs. And so that went on for a while. We then talked about maybe we would have a traveling genetic counseling camp that would go around to, you know, different HBCUs. And instead of expecting them to come to us, we would go there, engage different genetic counselors in that local area to come to the school and kind of create a half day or day long program. So, you know, we toyed with that. And how are we going to fund that? And what's that really going to look like? And then 2020 hit. And 2020 changed a lot for a lot of us, not only the pandemic, but in terms with Golden, and what really sparked it was, of course, the murder of George Floyd and the racial reckoning that at least was beginning. Now, you know, whether it began and stopped or whether it started, you know, something in some areas, but not in others, is, you know, certainly up for conversation. But it did provide an opportunity where those who had some power and were in a place of privilege, at least some, started to think, what more can we do? Now, in the meantime, I had done work over the years with our local genetics region network, the Department of Health and Human Services, through HRSA, had split up the country into regions and then given money to those regions to increase genetic and genomic services. And so in our particular region in the Mid-Atlantic, our organization was called NYMAC, or the New York, Mid-Atlantic, and Caribbean Regional Genetics Network in the end, but went through a couple iterations over the years. But in any case, that was the region that included Maryland, D.C., Virginia, up north, obviously New York, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, probably missing a few states in there, and the Caribbean. So I had worked with them over the years, various projects they had taken on. And so in this particular year in 2020, because of the pandemic, they did not have an in-person conference. Because they didn't have an in-person conference, they had a lot of money. So then they were sitting there thinking, what do we do with this money? Is there something we can do to help address these issues around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and justice? And so they asked me whether there was anything I could think of, anything that they could do. And I immediately said, my wheel started turning and said, maybe this is the opportunity. Maybe this is the space. And so I called on a very close Black genetic counselor colleague of mine, Grace Ann Fassay. And she and I put our heads together and came up with Golden. And so essentially what Golden is the mission of it is simply to increase the number of Black genetic counselors. But we understand from research in the past and work that had been done before us that that is not simple, go to a HBCU, talk about genetic counselor, and suddenly everybody's going to want to be a genetic counselor. It really does take more than that. Now, she had gone through, in her undergrad experience at University of Maryland, Baltimore County, had gone through a mentoring program where essentially they identified students who were interested in STEM and then really stayed with them over the course of the 4 years to provide ongoing mentorship, ongoing engagement, identify needs and things that they had and really tried to address them over that time. And she had shared that that was really critical to her even staying within the STEM field or a STEM field. And so we bought that experience that she had into it as well and essentially, you know, put our heads together to say, okay, we need to create a whole cohort, right? We need to create a space where we have mentees that we engage over several years to increase their awareness about genetic counseling, provide them with the experiences that would help them become competitive genetic counseling candidates, because it certainly is quite competitive. And often these students or individuals who are interested in genetic counseling just didn't know where to start. How do I get shadowy experiences? If there's no genetic counselor around me, what else can I do to show my readiness, my familiarity with the field? You know, what are program directors looking for? What's important for me to put in my application? What experiences are needed? If, you know, the typical experiences maybe aren't available to me because of where I am geographically, or because I'm trying to hold down this family, or because I'm in school and I'm just trying to keep that together, you know, how can I still prepare myself for graduate training in genetic counseling? So it's with that that we've really developed our programs, which include having monthly to bi-monthly to sometimes every other month, but having regular meetings for our mentees, which range from individuals just starting their undergrad journey and haven't quite gotten to those high schoolers, but, you know, certainly reaching those early undergrad students, up through people who are toward the end of their undergrad to people who are post-bac, who have graduated, maybe out in the workforce, but looking still for that right career option for them. And trying to reach all of them where they are and kind of give them what they need in that. And so we have a variety of speakers that we bring in, from people talking about how to, you know, write a resume, to how to create a personal statement, to having people who are on admissions committees come in and talk a little bit about what they're looking for. We provide a writing tutor for our mentees so that as they're trying to develop that personal statement or writing a statement to get an internship or whatever it might be, that we are there to be able to provide that support and have it paid for them so that they can really truly access it. We provide assistance as people are getting prepared for their interviews for graduate school. We do mock interviews for them, help them to understand maybe some of the situations that they'll be in, some of the questions that they might be asked, so they can really think through how they would answer those questions. We provide insight on the different types of programs. So do you want to go to a traditional program? Do you want to go to a virtual program, a hybrid program? What are some of the things that you're looking for? And then we've really been able to take advantage that we're now, you know, about 3 years into Golden. So we've had some students that have come through, been to a program, and have come out and are now working. And so we bring them back and talk about your experience at the particular program where you were, some of the experience you've heard from your, you know, other students that were maybe at other programs, and really even sharing that knowledge. Because there are certainly some programs that have gotten further as far as really helping their students feel included, feeling like they belong, and others that are still struggling in that space. And so it's important for students to know that as they're embarking into choosing, you know, which space might be best for me. Where do I feel like I can make that impact? Because it really does depend. Some don't mind having that additional support. Others really need it. So kind of knowing yourself and knowing what's best, and then us being able to help you navigate that process. So Golden really has been successful in our space, in our minds anyway, as far as how we've been able to assist folks. But we still have, again, a long way to go in getting those numbers up.
This has been part one of our interview with Barbara Harrison. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Eli Robertson. Join us next week to hear part two.